Hello and welcome to this week's installment of Nicholas Investment Insights. And today we're looking at stock market valuations and company forecasts. And we've entitled today's presentation, Lies, Damn Lies, and Stock Market Valuations. I'm joined, as always, by our Head of Investments, Damien Klassen. G'day, Damien.
Hi, Tim.
Thanks for that. Fantastic. And with no further ado, we will jump into our first live investment piece for the year. So we've got Market Valuation 101. So we're going to be looking at market valuations, what they are and why they're important to your role as an investment manager and putting in together forecasts and finding stocks to purchase. We'll then be looking at earnings growth. We'll then be decomposing earnings growth. And then wrapping up, as always, with an investment outlook and how we use these themes every day in the portfolios at Nucleus Wealth. So would you like to begin, Damien? We've kick off with our market valuation 101.
Yeah, sure. And it's a little bit slide heavy, this one. So if you're listening in on the podcast, might be better to download some of the slides, because it's more about the concepts that I'm trying to get across. And I think a lot of them are illustrated a bit better by graphs. So we're starting with just the simple... I've got the S&P 500 index up there. That's the biggest index in the US market. And that is made up of 500 stocks, and they're basically in various weights. And so Apple's a much bigger weight than say Citizen Financial Group or some of the smaller ones in there.
Sure.
And and so what it means is that the bigger ones that go up means that the whole market goes up. So it's basically just an average of all the stocks.
Okay.
What I've shown it against then is the earnings. Now, This is what I'm doing here is, and it's forward earnings. So this is the forecast earnings for those same stocks, and just showing how the two track each other. And you can see on this that basically wherever the earnings go, that's where the price goes
yep.
as well.
Okay.
And so, in short term, you definitely get dislocations between them.
Yep.
But over the long term, if you want to see markets rising, you need to get that earnings coming through to sort of back the market.
Okay, and just quickly, so when we say forward earnings, this is a projected earnings that are put together by the company or by analysts, or how's that working out?
These are by analysts.
Okay.
Having said that, though, it's really by the companies. One of the dirty secrets, I guess, of the analysis of the industry is that when you look at forecasts, and I guess I'm talking particularly about the first year of forecasts,
mm-hmm.
So just the 12 months out, which is what we're looking at here, is that companies, and especially big companies, give a lot of guidance to analysts as to what numbers they're expecting.
Okay.
And so what tends to happen is a company will come out and say, okay, we think we're going to do 10% earnings growth next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, some analysts come out and go, oh, I'm really ultra bullish. I think it's going to be 12. And somebody else go, no, these guys are terrible. It's going to be 8.
Right.
And they all sort of sit in this band around that 10%.
Yep.
The reality is the actual band is sort of like somewhere between plus 30% and minus 10% or something like that.
Wow. Yep.
And so analysts are really tightly bunched around a number which is the distribution in analyst forecasts versus the distribution of actual outcomes is like nothing. It's chalk and cheese.
Oh, wow.
The actual outcomes are so much broader than what analysts think they can be. So if you're looking at analysts and saying, okay, I'm going to use those and here's this company, it's got an average forecast of 10%, the best I can expect is 12%, the worst I can expect is 8%.
Yep.
You're just in a completely different ballpark.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And so I guess just sort of breaking that apart a little bit more. So as an analyst, if I was to pick up, say, using your example there, the 10% guidance, and then say, well, based on these factors, I think that you're being a little bit conservative. So therefore, that's where I'd get my 12 from. Is that how they substantiate it?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And if they came out and said, oh, we think it's going to be 20%, they'd be getting phone calls from companies. The company would be sort of saying, oh, look, your analyst, your forecasts are really brave and, you're just way out of the market and all this other stuff like that.
What are we going to do right?
Yeah, that's right. And so it is a and they'll get quizzed by all the people that sit on our side of the table, so all the buy side. So the people who are actually investing money will be calling up the analysts going, oh, gee, how come you're expecting 20%? You know, the company says it's only a 10, and so there's this whole institutionalized process that sort of drags that number back down to a
right.
number that's closer to what the company says it's going to be. So
okay.
in later years, it's not as much of an issue, but the reality is later year analyst forecasts are terrible. They're a scattershot in terms of what's going to be. So So I guess the answer is that, yes, the earnings forecasts come from analysts, but they really come from the companies.
Come the company. Okay, sure thing. All right, fantastic. So we'll jump across to forward price earnings. So maybe we'll just break that out as well in our 101 piece.
Absolutely. So so what we do then is if you take those two we just saw, so we saw the earnings and we saw the price, and we divide the two by each other, then that gives us a valuation metric, which can then say, well, when this number gets really high, so when the price relative to the earnings gets high, then it's expensive.
Yep.
And when it gets low, it's cheap.
Cheap. Okay, sure.
And so... So I've got a line up here showing again the S&P.
Just quickly on the left hand pane there, our y-axis is it's basically a multiple is what it's denominated in.
So many
times earnings.
Exactly.
Okay. Yep, sure.
And so you'll often hear that sort of quoted, and so most people sort of think about 10 times earnings certainly as being very cheap, 20 times earnings as being expensive, and 15 is probably about the average, maybe a little bit below that's about the average for most markets over the longer term.
Okay.
And so we can see here that on this one, the PEs sort of hit about 19 times back in the early 2000s and then sort of back up again just before the Trump boom, before the Trump tax cuts came through a year or two ago, they hit that 18, 19 times, and we're back there again now.
Mm.
And so, you'd sort of... At face value, you might make the argument saying, okay, well, it's really expensive. Now must be the time to sell.
Yep. Okay.
But then you sort of jump to the next one, which is saying that's not always the case. And it sort of depends upon what's going to happen for the earnings. And so I've got an earnings line up here. And what it's basically saying, just in a nutshell, is that, yes, earnings, the price-to-earnings ratio back in the early 2000s hit this 19 times.
Mm.
But what happened then was we had this massive earnings boom. The U.S. housing market was just getting started.
Yep.
Lots of debt flowing, money everywhere. And we had booms in Ireland and places in Europe as well. Like it was a global,
just a wash,
sort of global boom.
Yep.
And so even though the market was expensive at that point, two or three years later, the market had risen, but it was actually cheaper because earnings had risen so much faster than what prices had.
Yep.
That even though you paid up for it, It was actually worth it.
Still depressed the PE.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the same thing pretty much happened post the financial crisis. You got a similar one where the PEs spiked up, not as high, but they certainly spiked up, and then earnings came rushing back. And then pre the Trump boom in particular, his tax cuts. So you saw again, PEs got very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we got these massive tax cuts come through and earnings ran away and sort of justified the whole scenario.
Yep.
So the question is now, is this the market being sort of prescient about saying, oh, there's all this earnings about to come through?
Yep.
Or is it the case that the market's just got it wrong and it's too expensive?
Yep.
Now I've picked a chart here that makes it look pretty good. I don't have to go very far to find charts where it's not particularly good. So if I had to push this back a few more years, then you get the tech wreck in there,
yep,
and you get price earnings multiples of 25 and 30 times.
Wow.
So well above these current levels, and earnings didn't come through.
Yeah, sure. So. All right, very good.
So jump across to the next one.
Yep, sure.
So if you do put that as a bit of a scatter plot, and so what I've done here is basically saying, okay, let's just take every number just on a quarterly basis. We're going to look at what was the PE at the quarter, and then compare it to what was what happened to the earnings over the next 12 months.
So sort of
a look forward, saying, so if I had perfect knowledge, or if I use the PE as an example, you can actually see there's a pretty decent positive line. So when price to earnings ratios are high, you actually usually get a fair amount of earnings growth the next year.
Yep.
It's not always happens, but it's a pretty decent relationship between the two.
And is that just the on the basis that forecasts, or analyst forecasts are often correct?
Well, actually, what the trick with this and the subtlety is that this is actually saying what happens to the forecasts over the period.
Okay.
So do the forecast actually increase?
Okay.
Because what the trick is with this is that pre the Trump tax cuts, like nobody was sitting out 12 months before he got elected saying, hey, yeah, there's going to be tax cuts. I'm going to factor that into my earnings forecast now.
Mm.
Like everyone basically waited until he won the election.
Yep.
He got his thing. He passed it through Parliament, through the Parliament. Then... The companies started having a look at what was this going to mean to theirs, because some companies had the tax things they could take advantage of, some didn't.
Yep.
Then the forecast actually came through. So what this was is the market going, Trump's elected.
What's that mean?
He looks like he's going to do this. Right, we need to get in front of this and bid up these stocks because we know the earnings is going to go up 30% when you get this tax cut.
Yep.
Even though analyst forecasts didn't have the numbers in it yet.
Right.
It hadn't passed through. And some analysts would have.
Yep.
But as an aggregate, they didn't across the market.
Okay.
And so the interesting thing you can see from this is, when PEs are high, you do usually get that earnings growth coming through.
Yep.
But the next one is the price, and it's actually a bit of a negative effect overall, is saying, on aggregate, if you spend up on, so if I find a market that is expensive and I go and buy it,
yep,
I'm probably going to get the earnings growth.
Yep, yep.
The thing is, though, the price is actually going to probably be lower in a year's time.
Yeah,
because there's too much priced into it.
Yep, gotcha.
And that's the part where, and this is a much, much weaker relationship.
Mm-hmm.
This is almost a bit of a scattergun, but I guess where I'm trying to get to is markets are good at saying bidding up prices and seeing the earnings come through. What they're not good at doing is bidding up prices and then seeing the price growth come through
Right, and that's what counts.
Exactly. In the end,
what you got to sell.
That's what you're taking home. at the end of the day, has the actual price gone up or not?
Okay.
And so it's this funny thing about it being analyst forecasts are sort of one step behind what market forecasters are looking at.
Fascinating.
And the same thing happens when, in terms of those booms, when following the financial crisis, companies were being conservative. They were sort of saying, okay, we almost died. We almost saw all this, company almost fell over.
Plenty of belt tightening.
All this stuff like that.
Yep.
We haven't seen any. It looks like profits are starting to pick up. Maybe we will do 10% next year and we'll be getting back. And analysts were sort of going, oh, well, I'm really bullish on this. I'm going to make it 12%.
Mm.
And the company came out with 30 or 40%, as it came out of the
crisis. Yeah, right, an awful lower bound, I suppose.
Exactly.
Well.
And so people who were buying, though, were basically going, well, the companies don't know what they're talking about yet because they're waiting to see the actual sales come through, whereas we think this, we're making a bet now that this is going to come through.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. And so that's where analyst forecasts aren't
the be all and end all.
As forward-looking as you'd like them to be.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
Okay, so the next tricky bit is that what we've got is a graph in here showing what happens to the actual numbers. Because the thing is, what I've been showing there is what we call 12-month forward numbers.
Okay.
And 12-month forward numbers aren't, companies don't have a 12-month forward actual number. But what they'll have is they'll have what's our number for this year, what's our number for next year and the year after. And so what happens with these numbers is your next year's forecast becomes this year's actual. And then as you pass through a whole year, next year's forecast becomes this year's actual. The second year out forecast becomes the forecast for this year.
Yeah, so that makes sense. And so what like a ratcheting effect.
Yeah, and so what we're looking at this, I've got a chart up just for people listening in where we're going, okay, well, let's say people were forecasting 10% growth every year and you started with 100, 110, 121.
Okay.
And then that actually gets downgraded. So the actual forecast now, so the forecast one gets downgraded from 110 and becomes an actual 105.
Yep.
So it's been a 5% downgrade. The second forecast goes from 121 back to 115, so sort of about a 5% downgrade as well in terms of that. So both your forecasts have been downgraded, but now the forecast you're actually using to value this is your forecast one. So it's gone from 110 to 115.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So even though all the numbers have been downgraded, because you're moving forward in time, your actual valuation number has increased, and so that sort of justifies a market. And this is a pretty typical pattern in terms of analysts will be over and companies will be over optimistic about what's going to happen, and they'll downgrade their numbers over time. But the growth, there still will be growth, and because there's still growth, you still get the earnings, the whole market earnings going up.
Yeah, right.
Even though you're getting downgrades, and so you can express this as a squiggle chart, which I've done on the next one, which sort of shows a squiggly line of the forecast for each year going forward. So you can sort of see that where this is for the US market again. So if I focused on, say, the latest sort of 2020 year, which is the last line on this graph, you can see it sort of goes up and up and up and then comes down over time. And that's pretty similar, pretty typical, as you can see in this, is that the earnings start at a higher level and then come down every year as they get downgraded. but each line is slightly higher than the next one. So you get that forward, even though you're getting downgrades in earnings, you're still getting enough growth.
Yeah, sure.
That sort of propels the market forward. And that sort of flows through to this interesting factor that I find, if you jump to the next one, is what you find is that analysts are very focused and companies are very focused on this next year of earnings and not as focused on the following year.
Right.
So I've got an example here of where we've got these original earnings for people of where somebody was forecasting 100, 110, 121. And then they decide, the company came out and said to them, hey, your 2019 numbers are too high. You need to downgrade. We're not going to do 110. It's not going to do 10%. It's probably going to be only 5%. And so he goes, okay, well, I'll cut my 110. I'll cut 2019 by 5% down to 105, and I'll cut my 2020 numbers by 2% because that's sort of further out and, maybe a bit better recovery.
Yep.
And it all sounds reasonable. You say, okay, I've cut my first year because that's the company's told me that.
Mm-hmm.
And second year, I've I'll wind trim it back a bit, but I won't go as far.
Okay.
What that actually means is your growth rate goes from being 10% in both years to 5% in the first year and 13% in the second year.
Wow.
Because you've moved your first forecast down further.
Down so much, yep.
And so now it actually implies you have a boom year.
Yeah, in the second. Yeah, okay.
And what happens is this happens all an unbelievable amount of time. And because it's just that same process analysts will go through is I want to cut my figures in first one, but I don't want to cut my second year forecast that far because, whatever it is, I want to...
I've anchored myself
to that number already. And so what that means is you get this next chart where company numbers will go... So the second year numbers out will go up before they suddenly drop. And even though, so I'm going to pick on this one, the 2015, 2016 sort of earnings growth years. So basically these are the same squiggly lines, but just rather than expressing it as an actual number, it's expressing it as a growth rate. And so what you can see is that the 2015 year, the numbers dropped off quite dramatically. So they've gone from expecting about a 10% growth to expecting almost zero over about a 2 or 3 month period. At the same time, the 2016 numbers were actually being upgraded.
Mm.
So people went from expecting 10% growth to expecting 13 or 14% growth. Then they actually look at their numbers, in the company or their company reports, 3 months later, and they actually look and go, just a minute, we're not going to do that for 2016 either.
Yeah, right.
And then you see that as the focus goes off 2015, as it becomes an actual and the focus becomes on 2016.
Right. Yep.
And it's a very, very consistent trend. You can see that pretty much every year, these squiggly lines start at about 10%.
Yep.
So basically, the idea is, it's a nice round number.
Yeah.
That's that roughly
just,
what.
Is that the CEOs just phoning it in when they're sort of plucking a number?
There's probably an element of that, and there's people, as they put these forecasts together, it's just it's a nice round number. It's what our target. It's often a bit more of a target for an internal target. Yeah, we'd like to do 10% earnings growth, and we'll get that from. This
X and Y.
Yep. We'll get a bit of sales growth. We'll get a bit of cost cutting. We'll get whatever, and then we'll get it.
Okay.
And then as the year goes on, now you actually work out, what is really happening.
Yep.
And so what tends to happen is you start about 10% and you end up about 5 in a typical year, in that 5 to 8 range. Some years though, you get zeros and negatives,
mm-hmm.
and then other years you get these Trump boom years where the tax cuts come through. So as you can see, they're sort of expected about a 10%. And then the actual came through at closer to 25.
Yeah, for 2018. Yeah. The green one there.
The green one. Yep. Yeah. Which is basically most of that was all based on the tax.
Yeah.
Tax cuts.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, cut the tax rate. And so that's why in 2000 and where we are now, so 2019 is pretty much done. There'll be a little bit of up and down now as companies come in with their actual results over the next few weeks.
Yep.
But that's pretty much done. 2020 is starting to slide. 2021's lifting.
Right.
But that's not because I think it's really lifting. It's just that
problem you were saying
before. We were talking about before.
Yeah.
And we'll be in that until the companies actually come out with their 2019 numbers, and then the focus will be on 2020 and 2021.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good.
So with all that said, we can sort of decompose these into a different way.
Yep.
So what we can look at is we can turn this into saying the change in the price is going to be based on 4 different things. We're going to start with what is the growth that was forecast from that first year to the second year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of our baseline of what we're expecting,
yep.
growth we're expecting. Then you'll go, how did that growth get revised up or down? So that's the first year to second year change.
Change, yep.
And then you'll say, well, what was the earnings surprise as the actual became a, sorry, as the first year forecast became an actual?
Yep.
Then what did the change in valuations do?
Okay.
And this way, it gives a much clearer, for me anyway, it gives a much clearer breakdown of what's going on at the market and are you actually getting fundamentally, fundamental changes that are actually going to help drive the market, or are you building it on a bit of a base of sand?
Yep. Okay. Yeah,
so, sure. So if you jump to the next slide, I've sort of broken that out for the US market, and we can see that the, so the US market goes from 2018 to 2019, and it's up to 20-odd%. And you can see that part of that came from actual forecast growth. So yep. it was sort of almost 15%, but then that got revised backwards. Still positive, but got revised backwards. Sort of, and then a little bit of the earnings, a little bit of negative earnings surprise, and then all this multiple expansion. So. Mm. So earnings did almost nothing, and almost all of the US market came in 2019 came from multiple expansion. Having said that, that doesn't tell you that's cherry picking the data, because markets fell so much towards the end of last year it's working off a lower base. And we can see that on the next slide, where you can see that this is sort of saying, okay, well, if I took all those factors and put them together and show it over 5 years.
Yep.
Then you can see what's actually been happening over this. So so prices are up sort of 50-odd% over that 5 year period. You can see that every year we had that sort of 10-15% earnings growth factored in at the start of the year. But then earnings forecasts got downgraded over that whole period. And then we got the earnings surprise came through, and that big chunk of earnings surprise in the Trump tax cuts years.
Mm.
And that gave us, so you can see that, earnings has given us a fair bit of it.
Yep.
And then the last sort of 10-15% was done by changes in price multiples.
Yep.
So it's not the, and you can see that certainly that last period where, the price multiple for 2018 fell 25% and then for 19 rose 28%. So yeah. It was basically just getting back most of what was already priced in over the prior years.
And so what, obviously it feels like, so when you're looking at growth and forecasts, these are sort of, individual metrics and sort of the company sort of specific sort of things, where if you sort of flip to the right-hand side of this chart, then you're looking more at like just, I guess, the movement of money or the tidal movement of money, perhaps moving into
Are people classes? Paying, are they paying more for equities or less for equities? And also it's that whole idea about, are they pricing in future growth, which is typically what, I've got no problem at all paying 19 times for a market if there's lots of growth there.
Yep, sure.
The problem is when you're looking and you're just like, I can't work out where the growth's coming from.
Yep.
Like that's where you have to be concerned about paying up for it.
Okay. Yeah, sure thing.
So if you flip to the same chart for the Aussie market, though, it certainly looks a lot worse. And the reason why is, so first of all, the market hasn't risen as much. It's only risen 26%.
Yep.
But more of it's come from that change in the multiple. So the earnings is actually pretty much ended up, only slightly better than flat. So over 5 years, earnings really hasn't risen very much at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that although every year sort of that 10-15% priced in, that all gets wound back by changes in forecasts.
Yep.
And then you actually get the earnings surprises as well. And you end up with some pretty much unchanged earnings and all the work's being done by that PE multiple.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So, and then having said that, at the moment, there's really not a lot of growth forecast into the Aussie market as well.
Mm.
So potentially we could see that the latest spike in the iron ore price could blow some of that away.
Yep, okay.
But that's because that'll be a couple of companies with a big change.
Yep.
At the aggregate level, if you strip those out, it looks even worse.
Wow.
And you'll certainly see that obviously the drought and the bushfires and those effects are going to be a negative on the Aussie market.
On aggregate, yeah.
Yeah, even if we manage to export more iron ore at a higher price, it doesn't make up for what's going on
there.
Some
of the internal things. Okay, yeah, sure thing. All right, excellent. So as an investment outlook, where to begin? Australia is not built on solid foundations.
Yeah, so it's really that whole part about saying, there's this earnings growth that stock markets have factored in. So the US market sort of 19 times earnings, the Aussie market at 18 times earnings, and the US market, at least you can see some earnings growth there.
Yep.
But you're sort of looking at the Aussie market that's really delivered almost no earnings growth for the last 5 years, staring down the barrel of droughts, bushfires, RBA still cutting rates, trying to turn the economy around. Like, there's all these factors. It's hard to see where X, a commodity price increase,
yep,
from somewhere, how are you going to get that earnings? And certainly within the industrial sectors and the Australian-based companies,
yep,
it's very difficult to see where that earnings growth is going to come through. So
could there be an argument, and this is probably a little bit of broken window fallacy in regards to the bushfires, where effectively there are now a lot of broken windows that need to be repaired, and the,
absolutely,
you know, potential, growth, yeah, driver for GDP just in replacing everything that's been wiped out in the last sort of few months?
There's certainly an argument in terms of the There's a positive for it, and there's an argument that the Australian government hasn't been spending enough, and we subscribe to this one. They, yep, haven't been spending enough, and they need to get out and spend more money and actually put some stimulus into the economy.
Okay.
So from that perspective, yes, but the net negative from the losses of
time and effort,
yeah, and the drought effects and farm exports that won't happen, that could have happened.
Yep.
People paying more for you know, for steaks
and services,
and vegetables now, because it's things of those are higher. The net effect of the higher oil price, meaning people paying more at the pump.
Mm.
Like the net effect of the whole situation is, no, you wouldn't want it to happen.
Yeah, sure.
The fact the government's out actually spending some money that they should have been, we've been saying they should have been out spending more of this before,
yep,
rather than trying to protect this surplus, should be a bit of a positive, and a flow of, you do get flows of insurance money coming in from, it's usually from offshore, because the reinsurance market. So
yep,
the Aussie insurers will take a big hit on the first chunk, but then after that they'll have reinsurance that covers the next chunk, and that will come from effectively international investors giving Australia some
Australian
money.
Australian remittance.
Yeah, that's right. But it, you know, works in that, you know, each year a little bit of insurance, that reinsurance premium goes out.
Yeah, sure.
And then 1 year in every 10 or 1 year in every 20 or whatever it is, when you have big disasters in, you know, it all comes back in again. So so you're right in terms of that. Yeah, it is an extra stimulus. Having said that, we're going to see the negative first before we see the positive.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, as a total in terms of the houses and that it's been lost, we're still talking about low thousands.
Mm.
It's not talking about saying
a couple of whole cities or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Substantially the economy.
Like, you know, the Australian economy builds a lot of houses every year. That's sort of a couple of percent increase in terms of the number,
yep,
of houses that's going to be needed.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, sure. All right. Great answer.
So, yeah, so that, where that leads us to on the investment outlook then is we're sitting here looking at this this market where we've got central banks trying to push interest rates down and trying to make investors take more risk.
Mm-hmm.
So bond yields and sort of, you know, close to 1% at the, or 10-year bond yield close to 1%, and we've got negative bond yields overseas in a lot of countries. They're trying to say, we don't want you investing in safe assets. Most people's term deposits are now, you know, paying similar levels. We want you to go out and take some risk. So you're sort of looking through the laundry going, look, all the shirts look dirty at the moment, which is the cleanest one. and for us, international stocks are the cleanest of the dirty shirts, I guess, if you've got to choose from.
Sure.
So if you're looking at all these expensive assets, Australia looks expensive, and Australian stocks look expensive, and there doesn't seem to be the earnings support.
Yep.
Whereas at least in some of the international stocks, and particularly, you know, there's particular segments of the market that we like, you can see that, yes, they're expensive, but you can see some earnings support coming through.
Yep, okay, fantastic. All right, wonderful. Well, on that note, well, that's it for now, and thanks for watching. If you like what you heard today and you'd like to hear more, head over to nucleuswealth.com/subscribe, give us your email address, and in return, we'll send you a weekly email with new webinar topics, links for our podcasts, and other news from Nucleus Wealth. I certainly hope you've got something out of today, as I have, and we'll look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers.